a couple of months since the crash, said one of the older men.
These investigations take time, the woman beside him said.
And while they're taking their time, we're bleeding to death, as Robert said. There are some bright spots in the picture, Dan pointed out. We do have a nearly complete power satellite in orbit, and it's been successfully boosted to its permanent position in geosynchronous orbit. But you're not able to send any workmen to it to complete the job. For the moment, that's true. But that power sat gives us a very attractive incentive for new potential investors.
Such as your old friend Yamagata?
Ignoring the dig, Dan said, Senator Thornton of Oklahoma has introduced a bill that could help us to raise funding from the private money market.
But first you have to get the damned bill through the damned Congress, fumed one of the members.
That's true, Dan admitted. There are other possibilities, though. That's why I invited Mr. al-Bashir to our meeting. They all turned to al-Bashir. Dan said, He has a proposal for us to consider. Al-Bashir got up from his seat and stepped to the head of the table. Standing beside Dan, he said,
The proposal is very simple. Tricontinental Oil is prepared to buy 15% of the Astro shares now held by Mr. Randolph for a price of $1.5 billion.
That stunned them. Dan saw the surprise on their faces and realized that no one was saying a word. At last, one of the university people spoke up.
Will Tricontinental be willing to buy anyone else's shares at the same rate?
Glancing down at Dan, al-Bashir said,
Not at the present time, but there is always a possibility in the future.
That's it, Dan thought. That's how Garrison will take control of my company. The others will rush to dump their shares. If I sell to him, I'll be slitting my own double-damned throat.
Matagorda Island, Texas.
Passot was smiling, but Dan could see something else in his eyes. Resentment? Anger? Or was it something more subtle? Curiosity, maybe. The man sat there in front of Dan's desk with his floppy bow tie and his little mustache, and he smiled like a cat with a cornered canary.
You intend to fly the space plane?
The FAA investigator asked, his voice a mild purr.
And how will you obtain permission for that?
I've already got an FAA license to launch, Dan said, leaning back in his desk chair. It's still valid. He imagined himself playing poker in the Old West with a slick card shark who held all the aces in his hands. I've got to bluff my way through this, Dan told himself.
May I point out that a single phone call from me to Washington could revoke any launch permit that you have, said Passot.
We'll be launching out over the water, Claude. The booster won't be in American airspace. With a little nod, Passot said,
Not for more than a few minutes, I grant you, but still.
The space plane separates from the booster at an altitude that's miles above controlled airspace. You know that. Passot said nothing. And the booster breaks up and falls into the Atlantic, again, way outside of U.S. airspace.
But the space plane must return to Earth.
It can't stay in orbit forever. It must land, and for that it must fly through American airspace. Dan hesitated only for the span of a heartbeat. If it lands in the U.S. Passot's brows hiked up. That got him, Dan said to himself.
You'd land it outside American territory?
Out of the FAA's jurisdiction, Dan said. Sinking back in his chair, Passot clasped his hands together as if in prayer and raised them to his lips, thinking hard.
I suppose you realize that if I allow you to get away with this, my career in the Federal Aviation Administration is absolutely ruined.
Dan had expected that. Very evenly, he replied, That's why I think you should take some vacation time, Claude. You've been working awfully hard on this investigation. A week or so at a top-flight hotel on the Riviera would do you a lot of good.
Sighing, Passot said, Yes, a vacation would be wonderful, if I could afford it. On my salary, the best I could hope for is a Holiday Inn off the beach in Florida.
I have an uncle, Dan said, straight-faced, who's taken a suite at the Hotel Beaulieu, halfway between Nice and Monte Carlo.
Indeed.
Trouble is, he won't be able to get there,
Arthritis or some kind of ailment. He's pretty old, you know.
Well, that's a shame.
Well, the suite's paid for, and you know the French. They won't refund his money.
Passo tried to look severe.
Dan, are you attempting to bribe me?
Dropping the pretense, Dan answered, I'm trying to save your career, Claude.
And your company.
That too.
You and your uncles.
But Passo was smiling now.
I've got a lot of uncles. None of them are named Randolph, and all of them have their own credit cards that can't be traced back to me.
Shaking his head, Passo said,
You're a scoundrel, Dan.
Just a businessman trying to survive.
Passo was smiling now.
It would be wonderful, a week on the Riviera.
But it would end with the two of us going to jail.
Not if we time it right. Dan leaned forward across his desk.
You take a week off. By the time you get back, we've run the test flight. You express great outrage that I sneaked it in behind your back. Nobody else knows about it except you and me.
Passo stared at Dan.
He's tempted, Dan thought.
It all depends on how much he really wants to help me. He'll be taking a risk, but it's a pretty small one. I'll be betting the farm, the family jewels, and my cojones on the test flight.
No one else will know about it?
Passo asked in a silky whisper.
No one, said Dan.
He realized that April had already made the hotel reservation, but he was confident he could trust his executive assistant.
And how will you be able to tow your rocket out onto the launch pad and place the space plane atop it without anyone noticing?
Mating test, Dan replied innocently. As far as the government is concerned, and the news media, we'll just be testing the connectors between the booster and the space plane.
Alignment, electrical connections, systems compatibility, that sort of thing.
Passo said nothing.
The booster's solid-fueled. We won't need to fill our tanks and go through all that long a countdown. The plane will be crewless, nobody aboard.
A cloud of suspicion crossed Passo's face.
You promise that? Nobody aboard?
I swear it, Dan said. For long moments, Passo remained silent, obviously thinking, weighing his options, all the possibilities.
This could destroy me, he said at last.
I'll hire you if the FAA throws you out.
We could both go to jail.
You'll do it? Passo hesitated another few moments, then murmured,
I've never been to the Riviera.
You'll love it.
If this doesn't go well, I may have to stay there and ask the French for political asylum.
If this doesn't go well, Dan thought, there's no place on earth that I can run to.
Astro Motel. The sun was dipping below the scrub pines as April Simmons parked her baby blue Sebring next to the empty handicapped space and headed for the motel's bar entrance. No sense locking a convertible, she had learned. If anybody wants it badly enough, they'll slash the top open. Besides, nobody around here would bother her car. All the Astro people knew it was hers, and none of them were car thieves.
Pushing through the door brought her into the frigid air conditioning of the bar.
It's cold enough in here to raise goosebumps, she complained silently.
Then she remembered reading somewhere that they kept topless bars real cold so that the dancers' nipples would be stiff. It had been a long day at the office, with Dan in a sweat to get a booster set up on the launch pad so that they could mate the backup spaceplane to it. Most of the FAA people had left, though, and a crew of technicians had started gathering up the pieces of the first spaceplane's wreckage to store in precisely marked cartons that eventually would be stacked in a warehouse. The lounge was jammed with after-work people, most of them crowded around the bar three deep, men outnumbering women at least 2-1. Country music was thumping from the speakers in the ceiling, but the conversations and laughter and calls to the barmaids for drinks were so loud she could barely make out the song. Lay Your Head on My Shoulder, a classic. Dr. Tenney had always called it the transplant song. Thinking of Joe reminded her why she was here. April wanted to talk to the barmaids, find out what they remembered about Pete Larson, if anything. She herself had come to this bar with Pete once, on one of her dates with the man. Pete had shown more interest in the computer game console off in the